Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is John Cozy. We'll discuss two of John's new articles. John always writes articles I consider must reading. He's got one on the U.S. legal system. John and I have both written articles on the U.S. Supreme Court. In his article, John includes some important high court decisions going back a good many years. I've written about them as well. It's been a long time, and John has a second article on how we get ingrained with certain ideas early in life. He calls it the Sunday school syndrome. Oh, it could be, you know, in the early years of what America calls education, and the ideas stick, and no matter what new ideas come into people's minds, well, they don't come into people's minds. That's it. I mean, they just stick with the old stuff, no matter how wrong-headed it may be. They stick with the stuff. Anyway, we'll discuss that, both of John's articles. John, before we do, I mentioned to you, I sent you an email this morning. I mentioned that we ought to say something about Obama's, dare I say, duplicitous exhibition yesterday. His so-called speech on NSA reform. Well, I beat him to the punch, John, and I wrote an article before he gave the speech, just really taking him apart and basically indicating what I expected him to say, not in chapter and verse, but I know the way the guy operates. I know the way his mind works. I've written so many times about him. I know he's a serial liar. I know his word means nothing. And so I discussed it in the article that came out Friday morning. And nothing on his speech came out this morning. I wrote two articles that will come out tomorrow. One is one I call Obama Defends the Indefensible. And, John, if I may, I'd just like to read just a little bit of it. But it's a second article deals with reactions to his speech, mostly very negative ones, independent reactions where people are speaking freely about what he should have done but what he didn't do. And I throw a few establishment opinions in, too. You know, from the Republicans and from the Democrats and from the Wall Street Journal and from the New York Times. But I concentrate mainly on the good critiques, and they are very good ones. I try to be brief, but they're in there. Obama indeed defended the indefensible. There is nothing about NSA that has merit or value or stops terrorism or keeps us safe or has anything to do with national security. It's all about control. It's about espionage abroad. It's about getting an edge on foreign competition. It's for political advantage. You know, you spy on foreign leaders. In his speech, he said he won't do it anymore. He lied. He will do it, of course. It's important. America needs to know what they're thinking. So, you know, you listen to their cell phone calls. You read their emails. You get into their personal documents, the kind of stuff. It really is very personal and private, and nobody should invade. Well, your privacy, John, my privacy, the privacy of listeners to this program, and dare I say the privacy of foreign leaders and officials. But it's an important part of the NSA spying, it says. So it'll continue, regardless of what Obama said. And I started off in my article saying, Obama made sweeping NSA mass surveillance. He addressed sweeping NSA mass surveillance. He defended the worst of police state lawlessness. He believes privacy invasion intrusiveness should comfort us. If you can imagine that. He used the word comfort. He lied claiming it makes us safer. How does destroying civil liberties protect them? How does it make us safer? How does violating core Bill of Rights protections do it? How does trashing all rule of law principles? How does turning America into a police state? How do sweeping surveillance practices, greater than anything before, I think I made a mistake in what I said. How do sweeping surveillance, I'm just reading it. How do sweeping surveillance practices greater than, oh no, that's okay, I know what I'm doing. I'm simply not repeating the whole thing of what I'm saying. But I'm saying, how do sweeping surveillance practices greater than anything that's been done before because of the technology we have, how do they make us safer? How do they give us comfort? How do they protect us? How does letting the NSA operate as a power unto itself, do anything it damn pleases, be unrestrained, unregulated, and at the same time have the courts and the Congress and the administration absolutely in lockstep with what it's doing? These are the questions that I asked, and a few more. And Obama went on. It's astonishing some of the things he said. John, you can't make this stuff up. He called the NSA, he said, quote, "The folks at the NSA are our neighbors. They're our friends and family," quote unquote. "Our intelligence community follows the law," quote unquote. He called the NSA officials and staff, quote unquote, "patriots." I repeat, John, you can't make this stuff up. His own words.
Well, I've got a different take on it, Stephen.
Okay.
And, of course, I don't disagree with anything you've said, but my take on this is different. Obama has less than 50% approval rating.
Yes.
The Congress has an approval rating in the single digits. The Supreme Court, it doesn't have a very prestigious reputation any longer either. The American people don't believe that the government will do the right thing. Most people believe that, well, most people believe, and it's been demonstrated, that the government lies regularly. Okay? So this guy gets up there, makes a speech, and I ask myself, why in the world is he dumb enough to think that anybody is going to believe him? That's the real question. Why is he dumb enough to believe that? Why is any congressman dumb enough to believe that? Why is any member of the judiciary dumb enough to believe that? Americans do not believe their current government. And I don't care what he gets up there and says. Nobody is going to believe it. And he was dumb enough to say that this only works if we have the confidence of the American people. Well, that's never going to happen. He's never going to have the confidence of the American people. So he's admitting that what he's doing isn't going to work. He's just a dumbbell.
John, I absolutely agree with you. I think those are very important comments. His latest approval rating, the latest one by Gallup, which is about as establishment a poll taker as anybody, 39%, John, just about his all-time low. And the Congress, it bounces a point up or two down or so on, but in single digits, and Congress really is at an all-time low. If you can remember that the Congress of the United States, less than 10% of the population has any faith in it whatsoever, Republicans or Democrats, they trash them both. So I agree with you absolutely, John.
Yeah, you see, just pointing out that what he said is false and a lie and isn't going to happen, and you know it's all very true and all, but it's not going to do any good, because you know that's the nature of the stupid game they play. They can't not know that the American people doesn't trust them. They can, I mean, well, I guess they can know that, but if they do, they're really dumber than I think they are. If they know that the American people doesn't trust them, and they go on public platform and make this kind of a speech, thinking that they're going to be believed, then they're absolute idiots. I mean, you know, there's an old aphorism: a liar is disbelieved when he tells the truth. You know, I mean, what are you going to make of this? I don't know what you're going to make of it. He talks about our being safer because of all this kind of stuff. Well, let me tell you something. This country existed for more than a century without any spying apparatus at all. You know, and now suddenly we become safer since we have one? No, we haven't. You know, it's just nonsense. It's sort of like someone I heard on TV the other day talking about gun control. She said the gun rights people claim that more guns make us safer. America has more guns than any other nation in the world. We ought to be the safest place in the world. We ain't. You know, I mean, and we ain't the safest place in the world. Guns don't make us safer. Neither does spying.
Well, again, John, I absolutely agree. I mean, the activities of NSA and all the other things that government does, including the laws they pass that harm us because, you know, they disproportionately help the moneyed interests of the country, and by doing that, they harm the great majority, the so-called 99%. You could even call it the 90%. These are the people that are so greatly harmed. The other big kicker for me, John, is regardless of the opinion that ordinary Americans have of Obama and the courts, whether they do have an opinion of the courts, but certainly the Congress, regardless of their opinion, they're so inert, they don't do anything about it. They're inert, they're dismissive, they may complain, they may talk about it, they may moan, but they don't do anything. It's so different than during the 1960s, and it's through the end of the Vietnam War, when there really was activism publicly in their face. And this is the way that we got something, some change. Didn't get enough. Certainly took years to get what we did get, but we got something. And there's virtually none of that now, except small protests. So before Obama spoke at the Justice Department on Friday, there were activists, I would say at most a few hundred, I don't know the number, but at most a few hundred were protesting in front of the Justice Department, holding up signs and, you know, the things that protesters do. Hundreds? Why weren't tens of thousands out there? That's what I'd like to know. Why didn't they fill the Washington Mall? Why aren't they out in the streets in Chicago and New York and Dallas and Houston, San Francisco, all over the country? Why aren't they out there every day demanding that America has a government that serves the ordinary people of the country, not just the privileged ones? Why do they let these wars go on? Why do they let the resources of America go to handouts for corporations, go to war making, and the rest of it? And at the same time, vital social services are being cut. The most important ones, Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, and we get scammed with a program like Obamacare that's a health care rationing scheme. And when people finally catch on to that, it'll probably be too late. Well, I could go on and on, John, but my bottom line is people may be upset, but they don't do anything about it.
Well, I'll tell you why they don't do anything about it, Stephen. Most of them are too poor. They're scurrying around to get food on the table. They don't have time to go to Washington to demonstrate.
No, I'm not saying go to Washington. Do it in your own city.
Well, even in Chicago, they don't have time to do it. The guy who's not sure yet he has enough food on the table, he's going to have enough food on the table for his children at dinner time, doesn't have time to spend the day demonstrating in the streets of Chicago.
Well, I realize that's a problem, and I realize people who are lucky enough to have a job, even if it's a rotten one, and they got to go to work during the daytime or they'll be fired, and there are so many unemployed people around that if they're fired, they can easily be replaced. But at the same time, you go back to the 60s and 70s, John, and these poor people were out in the streets protesting for civil rights and to end the war. So if they could do it then, why not now?
Well, you know, I'm always skeptical about that. I don't know who was out on the streets, whether or not they were poor people. I don't think they were.
The poor black people were burning the cities back then.
They were burning, but their own, the parts of the cities they lived in.
That's exactly right. They burned the wrong parts.
Which reminds me, I once said. Once was in a conversation on a smoke break with a colleague, and I said, "American, we kill a lot of people in the United States." And he looked at me. He said, "Yeah." And I said, "Trouble is, we kill the wrong ones." That's what happens here. But what you're arguing has a lot of truth to it. Unfortunately, this nation was never meant to govern for the sake of the people. It was created to govern for the sake of what what was the American version of the English peerage? People who wrote the Constitution weren't commoners. People who started the government and became congressmen, senators, and presidents were not commoners. They've never been commoners. It's a house of peers. Mostly millionaires or people on their way to being millionaires who, for the most part, have never done a day's work in their lives. No labor leader has ever been a member of the American Congress, and that's strange, except for the fact that he's been prohibited from being a member of the Congress. I mean, we have this war. It's been going on here since the 1600s. The people are, farm, factory, and cannon fodder for the benefit of the peerage. And that's the American way, and that's,
That literally is the American way, John. The people who showed up in Philadelphia in 1876, whenever it was, they were the people who designed the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights for themselves, to protect them and their privileges. And they didn't give a damn about ordinary people. It was the kind of people who showed up there today would call them a Wall Street crowd. I mean, they were bankers, they were lawyers, they were politicians. They were merchants, they were landowners, they were slave traders. I guess we still have slave traders in new form today, John. Not having people working your farm or something or other. Oh, no, I'm sorry, they do. Well, that's exactly what goes on in different form. But we have, instead of chattel slavery, we have wage slavery today. That's the point I want to make.
Yeah. And I've beaten this point almost to death in articles I've written, but there's nothing in the Constitution that makes this country's economy capitalistic. Nothing about the way the economy functions is in the Constitution at all. Even private property isn't protected by the Constitution. As a matter of fact, the words private property occur twice in the Bill of Rights, and it's all about what the government has to do to take it. Not to protect it, but to take it. The economic system that we've had in this country since the 1600s was brought with the Pilgrims from England and put into practice here. And the courts have written protections for it into case law. And it's case law in this country which protects the economic system. It's why the Supreme Court comes up with Citizens United. They want case law to protect the economic system. That's all they're there for. They're not there for to adjudicate anything in terms of justice or
John, are you still on? I think John got cut off. He'll call back. Well, I fundamentally agree with John, absolutely. John Adams, the second president of the country, he said the nation should be run by the rich, the well-born, and the able. And the first Supreme Court Chief Justice, John Jay, said the people who own the country should run it. That was the mentality then, and it never changed down through the years.
Are you there, Stephen?
Yeah, I sure am, John. I guess you got cut off and you got yourself back on again.
Yeah. Well, I was saying the court isn't interested in protecting the Constitution or making a legal system in congruence with it or establishing justice or any of the things that are written in the preamble of the Constitution. The courts are interested in protecting the economic system that the Puritans brought with them from England in 1600s. And we're the only nation in the world with a 17th century economy in a 21st century. I mean, and that's all there is to it. And the fact that nobody in the establishment press has the audacity to stand up and say it and call Supreme Court justices the traitors that they are is just astounding. Nobody in this country, not even college professors for the most part, will do it. You know, and in the face of that, I don't know what people can do. I really don't. We can demonstrate, I suppose, but unless you get the Supreme Court to quit doing what it does, you'll never change anything.
It's very tough to change things. I do appreciate that problem, John. Even back in the activist 60s and 70s, it took many years to get the Congress to finally defund the Vietnam War after Nixon declared Vietnamization and U.S. forces came back and so on. But, I mean, the activism began in the 1960s, mid-1960s or so, maybe a little bit late, but it went on year after year after year. And it wasn't until April 1975 that America left Vietnam and our involvement was all over. Of course,
yeah,
it wasn't really over.
Yeah, the interesting thing was that the activists took that as a victory, but nothing changed except the troops came home.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, America has other conflicts, and there were so many covert ones where a rare establishment article, Washington Post, several years ago, wrote about, and I think this was when Petraeus was still in the military, the CIA guy who got defrocked when he was still a four-star general. He was involved in having U.S. special forces deployed in over 120 countries worldwide, and I think it's more than that now, it may be 130 or more. Well, there's 193 countries, I believe, in the world. So if U.S. special forces are operating covertly in over two-thirds of the world's countries, well, I mean, they don't go there for missions of cooperation with the ruling governments. They go there for mischievous purposes.
Well, Americans who know what has gone on, which is far too few Americans, but nevertheless, they know what the CIA did in overthrowing the Allende government in South America. They know what was going on when the Reagan administration tried to, intervene in Iran-Contra. They know what was going on. They know what was going on in Iran in the 1950s. I mean, he says that the president says that these spies are patriots and decent people. They're not. And history has proven it. They're not. But there's never any acknowledgement of it. I mean, I was working in the Congress when the Church Commission investigated the CIA. Okay, we came up with all sorts of illegal activities that they were engaged in. Yeah, they're still doing them.
Well,
I mean, that's just the nature of the game. There's no way to stop a spy from doing it except stop him from spying. Fire him. Otherwise, he's going to keep doing what he knows how to do.
Oh, yeah, either that or simply defund the whole program, but of course that won't happen.
No one's told the American people what the goal of the program is. I mean, Obama talks about we have to know what other countries are doing in relation to us. No, Mr. President, the other countries have to know what we are doing in relation to them. I mean, there are no secret agents from Iran stirring up trouble in America. There are no secret agents from Syria stirring up trouble in America. They're you know, we've got there are no Iraqis here that we can kick out who are stirring up trouble in America. It's the other countries in the world that have to be spying on us to find out what we're doing. We don't need to be spying on them.
Well, that's exactly right. There is no terror threat affecting anybody in America. In the post 9/11 era, when Bush declared a war on terror, there hasn't been a single individual or group that was uncovered and stopped from some kind of a nefarious act and was accurately called a terrorist or a terrorist organization. Oh, there have been many who were identified that way, but they were identified falsely. Again, zero terror threats, zero plots uncovered. I've written about dozens of them. And unfortunately, John, there are many, many innocent people languishing in U.S. prisons, and I justifiably call it a gulag, even though they committed no crimes whatsoever. They're called terrorists, or they were convicted of conspiracy to commit terrorism. Conspiracy, a code word, meaning when there's no evidence somebody was involved in a terrorist act or a plan to commit one, then you say there was a conspiracy. Well, you can say anything you want. It doesn't mean it's true. And none of this is true. I've yet to find a single individual that I'm aware of, and I'm talking about many dozens of them, 50, 60, maybe more, not a single individual guilty of anything at all, all innocent, in prison.
Okay, that gets to my second article. Or no, my first article, the one about law in America. People misunderstand law and its function in any society. What the law really is a catalog of what the people running a society approve of and disapprove of. And just like in primitive societies, when there was somebody doing something that a society disapproved of, they got rid of him in one way or another. Banishment, sent to penal colony, whatever, okay? We do it by sending people to prison. Critics continually talk about the need for rehabilitation. They don't seem to realize that rehabilitation means making a person become a conformist. That's the only way you rehabilitate someone who disagrees with an action that the society approves of. That's what it is. You take the guy who does things that the society doesn't approve of. You don't try to rehabilitate him. That would be impossible anyhow, unless you did him a lobotomy or something on him. You just put him away, get him out of society, and that's what we have done. Unfortunately, the number of people who disagree with what the society approves of is getting larger and larger and larger, and it's going to be harder and harder and harder to put all of them away, to get all of them out of society. And I don't know what the result of that will be, but that's what's really going on.
Well, you can't go after everybody. But certainly, America has by far the largest prison system in the world.
Yeah, amazing. we have the most people, the most residents who don't want to conform to what the society approves of. They don't want to conform to it for various reasons. No specific one reason or no few reasons, but numerous reasons. They don't want to conform to it. And if they don't conform to it, they become, well, what we call, quote, criminals, unquote, and we put them away. We get them out of society. But there are too many of these people. You can't keep them in jail, and you can't release them. It's Guantanamo Bay in America. You can't... They say you can't release the people in Guantanamo Bay because If you do, they'll go back to being jihadists. You can't release American prisoners. They'll go back to being antisocial. I mean, it's the same thing. There's nothing different about it. And the laws that the Congress passes are merely excuses for getting rid of people who disagree with the ways that Congress wants people to act. That's all.
The prison system is really a system of social control, John. The people you think may disrupt things in some way, you find a way to get rid of a number of them. The black community, the Latino community, has just been ravaged by the prison system, and most people who want in those communities have no idea. I have a regular guest on this program, John, who is a victim of that system, and he knows firsthand. He'll be on in another week or so, and he had gruesome experiences. Again, a guy who should be honored rather than persecuted. Let's take a short break, John, and we'll come back and we'll continue this.
Okie doke.
Welcome back. Talking with John Cozy. John, in your article on the law, you say something I certainly agree with and I consider very important. You say anybody who reads your article will never respect the law again or the legal system or anybody associated with it. I'd say that's a good point to let you continue on.
Yeah, well, to continue on, I would say that, what America is doing is not different from what other societies have done historically. That is, the legal system exists to bring conformity to the society, and every society to exist has to have a certain amount of conformity. And when a society encounters people who refuse to conform, it wants to get rid of them in some way or other. The Puritans did it in Massachusetts. They threw out, who was it, Roger Williams or something. He went to Connecticut and formed a Congregationalist church or something. It's a common historical anthropological activity. I mean, what societies do is try to protect themselves by enforcing conformity. And to enforce conformity, they use the law. And the mistake that people make is thinking that the law exists for some other purpose. It doesn't. I mean, it doesn't exist to rehabilitate prisoners, because rehabilitation means making them over again so they conform. But, Roger Williams wasn't about to conform, and most people who become... Who get arrested again and get sentenced to prison over again aren't going to change. They aren't going to conform. They just become criminals all over again. And if you think anyone thinks that rehabilitation is going to help, it's nonsensical, because what rehabilitation was is destroy the very freedom that their nonconformity presented to them, gave them in the first place.
Most of the nonconformity, John, that got them into prison is pretty minor stuff that never should have gotten them there in the first place.
That's true. And you see, the difference between societies like ours, that's really a 17th century society, and, say, Sweden, which is more a modernist society, is the number of things that society wants to disapprove of. In America, we have this Puritan heritage. The Puritans have long since died out, but we have this Puritan heritage that we don't do anything piecemeal in America. A few people who smoke marijuana, boy, you outlaw all marijuana or all drugs. Or, and, of course, when you do that, you create an enormous number of nonconformists. And then you're faced with the problem of running them down and arresting them and trying them and incarcerating them. And that becomes a problem in itself. But we do it all the time. This is, you know, the way we treat kids in school. What is the word for it? I can't think of it. You know, we outlaw guns in school. That's a good idea, but then we threw a kid out of school because he comes to school with a 3-inch toy gun. I mean, you know, I mean that's ridiculous, but nevertheless, it's what we do in America. That is, we don't have any leeway for anything that people do. It's you either conform or you don't, and it's destroying the society because it creates more and more and more and more criminals, and it's getting to the point where even state governments are beginning to realize that this can't go on. With, you know, Colorado and other states legalizing marijuana. Well, that's the first step. Okay. They'll legalize marijuana. Marijuana will become legal in 50 states in a few years or a decade or so. And society won't fall apart because of that. But a lot of people who have been incarcerated for their nonconformity to that rule will have had their lives destroyed, and it'll have had nothing to do with, you know, making America a better place to live in.
Well, that's for sure, John. And if we can legalize semi-automatic weapons, and we hear all the time about incidents where somebody goes on a rampage and kills half a dozen people or something like that, occasionally more numbers than that. If we can legalize that kind of lethal death. It's a weapon. Call it a product that you can buy at a gun store or a gun show or something or other. Then we can certainly legalize a substance that people want to take into their bodies or smoke or inhale or any other way they want to ingest it. We certainly can do that. I mean, at the most, they would harm themselves. But Americans harm themselves all kinds of ways. The junk food they eat, the cigarettes they smoke, the alcohol they drink too much of. I mean, all of that stuff is legal. But if you want to smoke a marijuana cigarette, they can put you in prison. If you want to use cocaine or heroin or another so-called illegal drug, you go to prison. And in states that have three strikes and you're out, if you're caught three times doing something, even a very minor offense relating to drugs, they can put you in prison for life. It's insane.
Yeah, it's insane, and it's self-defeating. I mean, you can't continue to afford all of this incarceration, you know, if you're going to continually make things that people want to do into things that society disapproves of and criminalizes, you're going to run yourself broke, which. It's kind of interesting. I thought of something today in an article. I'm going to. You want to win a war? The army that fights the war most cheaply is the army that wins. I mean, you know, what happened? We went into Vietnam with all sorts of sophisticated weapons that cost billions of dollars. Got the pants beat off us by people wearing pajamas and sandals and carrying simple hand carried weapons. Okay, we went into Iraq the same way with all sorts of weapons. We even made some new ones, extremely costly vehicles to carry troops in that were supposed to be not vulnerable to explosive devices, and they, of course, the the Iraqis found ways to blow them out of the water, blow them out of off the road. And we lost that war. And not only lost it, the government we set up to govern after as we left is now losing its position, and American veterans who fought in Fallujah and other places now see those cities going back to a Taliban control or incense about it. You're going to lose. We can't fight that war. We couldn't fight it then. It cost too much. And we lost the war in Afghanistan for the same reason. Yeah, our troops are still in Afghanistan, but as the Taliban last week said, they're holed up in their bases, afraid to come out. You know, I mean, we got this dumb notion in America that technology solves all problems. It doesn't. Technology creates problems. I mean, the adding machine made Americans arithmetically illiterate. You know, and the TV is the same thing. And the computer is doing the same thing. People talked about how wonderful the computer is and what it does to enhance your life. Well, I don't know what it did to enhance my life, and I use it every day. But you know, it's kind of interesting because I'll tell you what it's done that would never have done before. It's made security in the country impossible to bring about. Everything is insecure. Your financial records are insecure. You know, your personal life, information in your personal life is insecure. The computer has made it possible for businesses and government to know everything about you. And not only has it made, you know, those the lives of people insecure, the government itself is insecure, which it admits. It's worried about cyber terrorism. You know, and all of that, you know, why? Because we invented the computer. That's all. Technology isn't a boon to mankind. It's a bane.
Everything about us is available electronically, as we know, John. Our health records, our financial records, everything. You know, our personal data, social security number, you name it. And that's right. And hackers can get in there and steal any of it. And, of course, the NSA can get any of it that it wants. You and I were lucky in that sense. We grew up before adding machines, before computers, before television. There was no television in my home until I think I was a sophomore in high school. Computers really didn't exist until, most people didn't have computers until the 1990s. I don't know when they finally got caught on, and really it got most people to want a computer. I didn't have a computer for many years. My small family company, computers were needed to keep financial records and so on, but I never touched them. I never wanted to touch them. I didn't know anything about producing a financial report online. The only thing I wanted to know were the numbers. So let a guy who knows how to put the stuff all together online produce the reports and print out copies, and then we can read the numbers. That's all I wanted. So we grew up in a different age, John, and way back in college, you and I in grad school and so on, the way we had to do our research was go into the library and use Rolodex cards and go into the library stacks.
Yeah, but the thing that surprises me is that, you know, people don't seem to understand how much trouble the computer has caused them. They all they think about is, oh, I got to write a message to my buddy in so-and-so, Timbuktu or wherever. You know, hey, I'm going to the store. I mean, they think this is a big thing. And they don't realize that it's not. People think that, you know, the military think that drones are big things. They're not. You know, I don't know how many drones we have, but there aren't many drones being used in Syria. Why not? Because the Syrians have an air force that can shoot down drones. You know, there won't be any drones used in Russia. The Russians can shoot them down before they get across the border. You know, but Americans have this notion that, boy, if it's new technology, it's great stuff. It's going to save the world. It ain't going to do it. It ain't going to do it at all.
No, it's not, John. And I agree. As the technology improves, our security, our safety are really greatly marginalized all the more. And the goal of the NSA is literally to know everything about everybody everywhere. And as it gains more and more of that expertise, I mean, it just destroys whatever security and stability and safety we have. So you're right. The technology is really killing us.
But you know, the NSA, the, you know, spies are dumb. I don't care what you say about them. Spies are dumb. Politicians are dumb. NSA thinks that its technological prowess is going to enable it to know what's going on in the rest of the world and save us from it. There are people in Russia doing the same thing with the same attitude. They have their technology is going to know what America is doing and save them from it. There are people in Iran doing it. Everywhere they're doing it. You don't have to be some kind of genius to be an IT expert. Kids become breaking artists with technology. I mean, you know, the first people we had doing that were kids. They weren't people who knew anything. They just learned how to manipulate the code and how the code worked. And if they can do it, anybody can do it.
You know, John, it really amazes me how true that statement is. It's been a while since I've been in an Apple store, but I can remember one time being in an Apple store and seeing a young kid. I mean, he looked like he might be around 6 years old, sitting in front of a computer keyboard and pounding away at it and doing whatever he was doing. And I just shook my head to myself and said, my God, I mean, he's using a computer the way I used to use, what did I use? The multiplication tables when I learned them and the stuff that we learned way back in the old days. And here this kid is 6 years old or something. I mean, very small kid pounding away on the computer keyboard.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I couldn't imagine doing
anything. Furthermore,
like,
you know, I don't see them much anymore. But when I first started using a computer, there were programs out there that enabled you to write code, or could write your own program for your own computer.
Oh,
you know, there was one called Hello World that was ubiquitous. Everybody could write the code for Hello World. You know, I mean, sixth graders could do it. I mean, six-year-olds could do it, not sixth graders, because they're 12 years old. But it's just absurd to think of this stuff as terribly difficult. It's not difficult. And if NASA can do it, the KGB can do it, or anybody else can do it. And NASA is working on the assumption that they're going to stay one step ahead of the other guy. Baloney. There are too many other guys out there.
I guess if you can learn how to do something, John, it's not hard to do. Before you learn how, it may seem hard, but once you learn, you realize it's not that hard at all.
Yeah. You know, I remember, you know, my years as a professor the German language is pretty important for anyone studying philosophy. I mean, the writings of Kant and Hegel and Fichte and Schilling and those guys, you know, and they're not available in English. They're not easily available in English. And I used to say to them, learn German. And they used to look at old German characters. Say, oh, I could never really learn German, you know. And I said, I used to say to him, I said, look, idiots in Germany learn German. I mean, why the hell can't you?
Oh, indeed.
You know, people just don't think at all. I suppose gets me back to one of my articles. Which one? The one on education.
Yes.
I started that. I did that. That article was occasioned by President Obama's comments about what has to be done and how we need science and technology and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to point out just how out of touch with reality he is. He kept talking about technology, and I pointed out that he didn't seem to remember that Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and Zuckerberg weren't even college graduates, no less engineers and scientists, you know. And they're the guys who did the things that are driving the American economy. We don't need to produce more scientists in our educational system. We don't pay any attention to the ones we have now. It's just kind of, and he would say said something like the scientists make the products that we sell to the rest of the world. And I said, no, they don't. Scientists don't make products. Factory workers do. You know, the people who, the expatriates who America used to develop the atomic bomb didn't start building atomic bombs and sell them to the rest of the world. No, our politicians did that. You know, and it's that kind of thing that he doesn't seem to understand. He's out of touch with reality.
John, you make the point in your education article that the schools hand out degrees to graduates who end up knowing no more on graduation than they did when they entered the educational experience.
Yeah, Obama's one of those. But I think some better examples are George Bush and Ted Cruz. You know, I mean,
Bush for sure. Ted Cruz, I know a little bit about Ted Cruz. I've written about Bush, and that's exactly right. I mean, he got into top schools and graduated, quote unquote, because of his daddy.
But I don't know why how Ted Cruz got in and graduated. Except that, you know, what he went in believing, he came out believing. And that's just a waste.
He sure attended it down in Texas.
But he went to Harvard.
Did he go to Harvard? I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, and we have a congressman in this district who's a graduate of Harvard Law, and he's about as reactionary as anybody can come. And I ask myself, how can anyone go through school, get a degree, and then go to law school and get a degree and come out that dumb? And there's only one answer. The schools are being taught by people who are just as dumb, which means that the American educational system has been a rot for a long, long time.
Well, they don't teach what people need to know, John. You know, when you go to law school, you're learning a trade. You go to business school, you're learning a trade. But when you get a general education, whether it's in philosophy or political science or whatever, you're supposed to be taught how to think. I mean, what's more important than to know how to think? And I must say, John, and maybe you feel this way as well, in my personal case, the best education I got was after I graduated. In other words, self-education.
Well, sure, that's what education is. I mean, I told this story. It's in a paper somewhere, but maybe a recent paper. But friends of mine used to ask me things like, who weren't academic people, who used to ask me, what's a good college for me to send my child to? And I never wanted to answer that question. And they say, well, don't you believe that college is a good thing? And I used to say, well, sure it is, I said. But if your child is a good student, he or she will get an education anywhere he or she goes. And if the child is a bad student, he won't get an education anywhere he goes.
Indeed true, John. The music says that we are all done. I look forward to getting you back next month. I wish we had more time to talk about shall I call it an education article? Because there's a lot of ground we can cover on that. We got into it a little bit, maybe more next time. John, many, many thanks.
Okay, see you.
Thank you, John. Join us tomorrow. We'll be back on at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular hour.